Roundup is now considered the most heavily used agricultural chemical in history. But critics have raised concerns over the health impacts of the glyphosate chemical, and now a science journal retracted a study on Roundup safety, citing, in their words, serious ethical concern. Larry Mueller here going to try to make sense of this news, plus hear a little history about Monsanto and Roundup as well with our guest Bart Elmore joins us now. Bart Elmore is a professor of environmental history and core faculty member of the Sustainability Institute at The Ohio State University. Bart's the author of the book Seed Money, Monsanto's Past and Our Food Future. He's written several other books as well. And as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in. What do you think about the chemical herbicides? Are you a farmer or a gardener maybe who's used Roundup? What do you, or use it now? What do you think about concerns over its safety, and will you continue to use it? Well, questions do you have? Give a call. Number's 800-642-1234, or you could send an email to talk@wpr.org. Bart Elmore, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Larry. This is great.
Last month, the Journal of Regulatory Toxicology and Pharmacology formally retracted a scientific paper published in 2000 that had some key findings about Roundup and public health. The paper's titled Safety Evaluation and Risk Assessment of the Herbicide Roundup and Its Active Ingredient Glyphosate for Humans. That was back in 2000. And what did that paper conclude?
Well, it was a really key study that I think for Bayer, which actually bought Monsanto in 2018, has been used as to say, look, here's a study that shows glyphosate is safe. It's a study that holds out that there really aren't any harmful effects on humans. But just to give some context for this, you know, Roundup is an old herbicide. You know, it was produced in the 1970s, beginning in the 1970s by Monsanto, this chemical company from St. Louis. It became the first billion-dollar herbicide in history. I mean, it was the most profitable and very successful. And one of the reasons it became so popular was in 1996, when Monsanto was able to genetically engineer crops to be able to tolerate heavy spraying of glyphosate during the growing season. These were called Roundup Ready crops. So you could spray your crops, kill the weeds, but it wouldn't hurt the plants. And so Roundup use really exploded after 1996. The problem became in 2015 when the World Health Organization's cancer agency, IARC, issued a statement saying that glyphosate was a probable human carcinogen based on their meta-analysis of academic studies and journals. And that led to a bunch of litigation over the last several years in the late 2010s. And this was one of those studies that could be held out, the Williams study from 2000 by Bayer, which had bought Monsanto in 28 to say it's safe. But as you mentioned, it was recently retracted. And so that's created a lot of change.
that's a good preamble to this whole thing. Why was it retracted by the Journal of Regulatory Toxicology and Pharmacology?
Two really great scholars, in fact, someone I know very well, Naomi Oreskes, who is a professor of science and technology, history of science and technology at Harvard, and Sasha Alexander Kurov, who studies kind of science communication, did a deep meta-analysis of this Williams study to see how influential it was, both in public conversations, you could think of Wikipedia citations, and also in the academic journals. And it was cited hundreds of times. In fact, they saw it as one of the, I think it was like 0.1% of studies that had been cited to suggest the safety of glyphosate. But during those trials that emerged in the late 2010s, after IARC had determined that it was a probable human carcinogen, plaintiffs around the country argued that cancers that they had, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, was linked to glyphosate exposure. And during those trials, a document was released. I was writing my book at the time, that showed very clearly that Monsanto said they had essentially ghostwritten that Williams study. That is to say, they had it, you know, they had had Monsanto employees that had been shaping that article. There was a conflict of interest there, obviously. They did not mention that conflict of interest. They didn't mention these authors who are related to Monsanto. And so with Naomi's work, which showed how influential this study was, coupled with that document that showed it had been ghostwritten, the journal ultimately decided to retract that very important study.
Yeah. And then as some of the evidence I was reading, I mean, there were emails that they were able to obtain that clearly showed this Monsanto's own writing of this.
Yeah, and, you know, look, Larry, for me, I spent over a decade studying this company, and I was able to get inside the corporate archives of the company. They gave me permission to go in to look at their records. And while I think a lot of the documents that came out of the trials were the most damning, that is to say, during discovery, as documents were released, where they said these things, you know, they said them very directly. I mean, here's one in front of me right now. Quote, "Ghost wrote cancer review paper, grim at all." Monsanto's Dr. David Saltmars, who in a summary report of his 2015 accomplishments. So this was the language I was seeing, you know, very clearly. In fact, there was another scientist, I'll give you another quote from inside the company. Monsanto had been talking to an ex-employee and consultant, and they were going to try and keep his name off of another glyphosate paper that he worked on. And he said this, he said, quote, "I can't be part of a deceptive authorship on a presentation or publication. We call that ghostwriting, and it's unethical." So there is a paper trail here. I think that is what gives people a lot of concern, that suggests there was a lot of attempts to ghostwrite or influence the conversation about the safety of glyphosate. And that's, I think, what's leading to a lot of concerns about it today.
And a lot of trials. As well.
A lot of trials. Yeah, I mean, when Monsanto was bought by Bayer, Bayer was worth $120 billion. That was essentially its market cap in 2018. Right after they bought them, they lost the first Roundup case. It's called the Dwayne Johnson case. It came out of California. A gardener who claimed his exposure to Roundup was linked to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. They won that case. Over the course of the next 6 months, Bayer's market cap went from $120 billion to about $60 billion. It was worth half in 6 months of what it had been worth before. And so these cases have become a real boogeyman for the company because they don't really know how to solve this. There was an attempt to settle it. Bayer set aside $10 billion to settle all these different cases, hundreds of cases around the country, but many people don't want to settle. So there are cases still ongoing, and Bayer has actually reached out to the Supreme Court to try and have it intervene to say, look, we shouldn't be sued for a chemical that the EPA approved us to use, and that you know, the EPA had studied and said it was safe to use. So they're trying their best to get a Supreme Court intervention here to block the litigation going forward.
Oh, my gosh. What was your reaction when you heard about the retraction?
Well, interestingly, historian, it's a pretty small world. So I knew Naomi. You know, interestingly, Naomi Oreskes is also the person who wrote a book called Merchants of Doubt. The same person who was able to show why this paper should be retracted wrote this book called Merchants of Doubt, where she had actually shown the playbook that the tobacco industry had used to sow doubt about smoking. She had also written the book in this book as well. It showed the ways in which the kind of climate change deniers were able to sow doubt about climate change, to try and block action on climate change. So she's a legend. This is not her first rodeo. And so I really wasn't surprised. What I thought was remarkable was the depth of the analysis that she and her colleague went through. So they went to Wikipedia, for example. And I encourage people to go do this today. Go check out glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup. And the Wikipedia page, you can go up and look at all the edits, the history of who's changed what. And you'll see these moments where there were real attempts to edit the discussions about the Williams ghostwriting, you know, because there had been leaks as the trials moved. No, let's remove that. This is a reputable study. And so she just did an amazing job, I think, of tracing how even on a site like Wikipedia, which we all know is, you know, not a gold standard journal, but it influences how people think about, well, should I go buy this or not? How this was playing out in spaces like that. So I would encourage everyone to go check out Oreskes' article as well. It's a really great piece of historical work.
You know, I'm sitting here thinking, I am an emeritus professor at the University of Wisconsin, and part of my work, I conducted research, and I can remember research of other professors who some of the money came from companies to prove or disprove something. And I can remember in one case, at least one that I'm familiar with, where the company was really mad because the professor was willing to do this correctly and learned and reported things that went totally against the company's interest. It's beyond my comprehension. If someone had come to me and said, let me write this research article for you, then we'll just put your name on it. I mean, it's beyond the pale for me to even think about agreeing to something like this.
Absolutely. And I should just give a shout out to the University of Wisconsin. I'm an environmental historian, and University of Wisconsin is one of the legendary centers for environmental history. So I would think that most of the historians there would have done the same thing. And you even see it in that example I gave you. People were approached, and we have documents from inside that say, no, I'm not going to do that. I think that's unethical. I'm at Ohio State. It happened here. And so, you know, we know that this money influences the decisions being made. So it's tough.
It is indeed. Our guest today is Bart Elmore, professor of environmental history and core faculty member of the Sustainability Institute of The Ohio State University, and author of Seed Money, Monsanto's Past and Our Food Future, and several other books as well. Questions for him as we talk about glyphosate, Roundup, give a call, the number 800-642-1234, or you could email us, and the email address, talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking about glyphosate or Roundup on the program today with our guest, Bart Elmore, professor of environmental history at The Ohio State University. Lots of callers, lots of emails. Let's go to Michael in Burnhamwood next. Michael, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, yeah. I just have a comment and a couple questions. As a horticulturalist and a forester, I've been using Roundup for decades. And, you know, in my field, it's like the miracle elixir. You know, you kill the weeds and you can plant and you don't have that competition for the plants that you're putting in. So I just use it. I buy it and use it all the time. Gallons of it, you know, almost, you know, in a season. But anyway, I wanted to ask if you could tell me, what is the chemical process that causes the plant's death? I think it's interference with some chemical processes, and how does it kill the whole plant, including down to the roots? And then, is there any detrimental residue left from glyphosate in the soil, or does it break down? I've been telling people or believing that it breaks down into organic elements, and it's harmless to the soil after it's used. Thank you.
Michael, thank you for calling. Bart, are you familiar with that process?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you know, one of the things I did here in Ohio is I'm obviously surrounded by a bunch of farmers. I worked on a cattle farm when I was in grad school. And so I think, you know, a lot of us had exposure to Roundup or have spent time with people. It is, you know, in 96, if you talk to anybody who's been in the game for a long time, they say it was like magic. You know, when you had Roundup ready crops, outside of what this person was talking about, which is just the effectiveness of Roundup as a broad spectrum herbicide, you know, for various things, whether you're a gardener or a horticulturalist, you know, but for farmers particularly, it really simplified things in the short term. You know, it was a pretty remarkable thing. You could spray your crops during the growing season. It was genetically modified so that the crops would survive, your weeds would die. But the mechanism is really important. And I'd actually, for this caller, I'd want them to think about this. I started out in biochemistry, which is what I love this stuff, because I think knowing the science matters. The way that glyphosate works is essentially it's a EPSP synthase inhibitor. Okay, now that's a wonky thing to say, but it's basically an enzyme inhibitor. And what it does is it binds to a particular enzyme that's found in plants. And this is very important. In the 1970s, one of the arguments about why glyphosate was so safe was that mammals and humans do not have this EPSP enzyme. So the thought was, you know, it'll affect and disrupt this enzyme's activity in plants, preventing them from producing amino acids that would allow them to grow. But it won't have these harmful effects on humans and other wildlife. The thing that I would want this caller to look into, and it's something that I'm writing about in my new book. I'm writing a microbial history of the world. So I'm focusing on the microbiome of the gut, but also thinking about microbiomes in the soil. And I think one of the interesting paths I've been following since that book came out is the fact that we know that this synthase EPSP enzyme exists in microflora, in our gut. And they exist in the microflora, that is to say, the microbes that are in our soil. And if you do a broad search of the literature right now, you're going to find Nature articles that have come out that suggest, and I want to be very clear here because I'm a historian, and I think it's so important to be very clear on the science. We do not know yet whether there are links between microbiome disruption and clear links between various health ailments people may be facing. And to be clear, it's possible that somebody who's been using Roundup for a long time may not have any health effects. That's just the nature of how some of these exposures happen. But I think one area that this caller might want to look into, and others who are kind of interested in, well, what does the current science say about the safety of glyphosate, is this new area of microbiome research and the effects. Okay, so we don't have any EPS enzyme in our own human cells, but on the tip of my finger here, there may be more microbes than there are people in the United Kingdom. Sorry, I know you can't see me on the radio, but pointing to my finger, you know, it's remarkable. We have 100 trillion microorganisms in our gut. And I think this is a really something we should be paying attention to. If glyphosate, even in low, and this is your point, we do know that there are residual quantities of this stuff even found in Cheerios. Well, the question is that enough to have adverse health effects for people? These are questions that I know because I've been inside the labs in Cambridge and other places of scientists who are looking at this very closely. And I don't want to be alarmist to say, we know for certain it's going to cause this or that. But I do think it's an area that me as a parent and somebody who's also been around glyphosate myself, like the caller has, is really interested in looking more into. So.
And as an aside, can you let Clara know when your book is coming out? We'd love to have you back to talk about that, to talk about your new book, because that sounds really interesting. Let Clara Neipert, who you've been dealing with, know so that we can get you scheduled for that. You know, just to go along with to sort of an angle of what Michael in Burnhamwood was talking about, we got an email from Jeff in La Crosse. He's writing to get, he has a secondhand report on what he heard from his nephew, who is a farmer in Caledonia, Minnesota. Jeff's nephew said Roundup is no longer works for him. It actually has very low effectiveness, and it's creating a lot of problems. His worst problem is wild marijuana. Roundup has no effect on it at all. He said in the past that reps from Monsanto have been in the area creating legal troubles for him and his farmer neighbors.
This is such an important thing, Larry. I feel like your callers are priming some, like, the most critical things I think I would want a public audience to know. Which, by the way, thank you for allowing scholars like us to come on your show, because it's so important for us to connect to folks who are out there trying to think about these problems. So, yes, I mean, the biggest thing that I wrote about in my book, Seed Money, was exactly what this caller was experiencing. As early as 1999, we began to see weeds that were developing resistance to Roundup. And it's no surprise that when you put selection pressure on a species, I know your callers are, you know, environmentally conscious, you know, those species are going to adapt. And that's what's remarkable. 96 was the introduction of Roundup Ready crops. Within 3 years, we started seeing, because of the amount of glyphosate being used, weeds were developing resistance to it. Now, you had mentioned, Monsanto, what if they came to Wisconsin, what you would have done? Well, this isn't a hypothetical. Here at Ohio State University, we have the top weed scientists in the country. And these aren't people that are either pro or anti-GMO. They're out there to help farmers however they can. And they were noticing in their greenhouses resistance for Palmer amaranth and other mare's tail and other different weeds very early on were developing resistance to Roundup. And they said, you need to go tell your farmers. Monsanto, this is a true story, showed up at my colleague Mark Lapps's office here at Ohio State. He'd been here for decades. He said, I'm seeing the signature of resistance. You need to tell farmers that you shouldn't be spraying so much glyphosate. And the Monsanto rep told him, and this was in the book and quoted, he said, you're not seeing resistance, is what the Monsanto rep said to him. Now, Mark Lauck said, graduate student, leave my lab. Closed the door. And he said, he, quote, read the Riot Act to this Monsanto rep. And he said, look, you don't come into a public university and tell us, people who've been doing this for 20 years, we're not seeing resistance. It's happening. And so your caller, when I hear these stories of people like your caller, what they're trying to say is, it's a broken model. The kind of Roundup Ready, we're just going to spray this as much as we can and create these resistance problems. Because now farmers are having to go back to older chemicals to beat back those Roundup resistant weeds. Dicamba, 2,4-D. And these are more toxic chemicals. So that's one of the bigger problems, is that we have a broken system with the Roundup Ready system.
Mike in Bayfield wondered if Monsanto has any legal or civil responsibility for the harm done by glyphosate and the tainted research on it.
That's what's happening right now. I think that's why this Monsanto case is so, these cases are so big. Again, you have a company that is worth less than it was to buy Monsanto in the first place. I think it bought it for about $60 billion. It's worth less than that now. I've been inside of Bayer. I've actually talked to the C-suite executives since the book came out. It was a very weird moment. I have to say, I wrote the book and I got an email from one of their senior vice presidents said, we've read it. We'd actually like to talk to you. And I can tell you, I said, I'll talk to you, but I want to talk to you straight, you know. You've got a real issue here, both with the weed resistance issue and, frankly, some of the other chemicals, that are part of their past as well. And I think they're really struggling to figure out how to solve these cases. That's why they're going to the Supreme Court. By the way, check your news, update your web today. The Supreme Court met on Friday in private to decide whether they're going to hear this case to block these Roundup litigation from going any further. The argument being EPA said it was okay, so they shouldn't be sued for it. Well, what if you now know that the studies on which the public perception of the safety of it were meddled with? Does that change the game? That's why this Williams retraction is so important. Last thing I'll say is state legislatures, people should be aware of this, are being approached by Bayer to pass laws that would prevent Roundup litigation from being allowed in your state. Now, I don't know if that's happening currently in Wisconsin, but it's happening in Tennessee, North Carolina, Iowa, Florida, Missouri, my home state of Georgia. has actually passed a law that essentially protects Bayer from litigation.
Wow.
This is how serious I think this issue has gotten for the company.
Boy, Bart, I wish we had more time to talk with you. Lots of callers online, but we are out of time. I want to thank you, and again, let us know about that book, and perhaps we can have you back to talk some more about glyphosate and Roundup and some of your work in that area. Bart Elmore, professor of environmental history, Cormac faculty member of the Sustainability Institute at The Ohio State University. His book, Seed Money, Monsanto's Past and Our Food Future. And he's got another one coming out we'll be talking with him about down the road. Thank you for joining us today, and thanks to our team, Clara Kniper, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins, our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller, and stay with us. Lots more in store on WPR.